listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and we are having, well, at least if you're long in the stock market, you're having a hard time today. We'll see if John can help us turn it into something that's good. Well, all of you know John Rubino. He's been with us many times on this show. He is the founder of the popular financial website, dollarcollapse.com, and the co-author with James Turk, The Money Bubble, and several other books. John is always a pleasure to have him on. He always has great insights into the markets, and what a day to have him on. Thanks for joining me, John.
Hey, Jay. Yeah, you're right. What a day.
And, you know, I mean, to me, it's a little remarkable. The market supposedly was expecting a decline of 0.1% in the CPI, and we had a gain of 0.1%. But, boy, what a reaction. I'm looking at the NASDAQ. Right now it's down 5.15%. The Dow is down 1,286 points, 1,294, now 1,299, now 1,300, 1,301. It's just, you know, 4% down on the Dow, 4.4 on the S&P 500, 5.27 now on the NASDAQ. It's accelerating. But what do you make of this? It seems to me, John, like a real overreaction to something kind of minuscule. You know, instead of a 0.1% decline, a 0.1% increase. Why the reaction?
Well, two things. One is that we've been trained over the last 30 or so years to expect recessions to be short, sweet, and then followed by the Fed capitulating and going back to easing again. So everybody's expecting that. And stocks have that priced in. So any kind of news that implies that the interest rate increases are not going to end imminently freaks people out. And that's what happened today. Inflation came in, like you said, a little higher than expected. But the internals were also kind of scary because food prices are way up. And that's a very big deal because it's not just a financial thing. It's also a political thing. When food prices go up, it destabilizes a country. And so we're kind of looking at that. And now after this inflation report, some of the Fed talking heads are implying that we might get a full 1% increase in the Fed funds rate.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's a big deal because that, the government interest rates determine market interest rates. And if our rates keep going up, you know, if the government keeps raising rates, then that's going to raise mortgage rates at least. Mm-hmm. And if mortgage rates get up into the, say, 6% range, that's going to crush this housing market because houses are wildly expensive right now. They're only manageable for most people, only affordable for most people, if those people can get a 2.5% mortgage rate, like right. You could get a year ago. And now if it's 6%, that more than doubles the monthly cost of a typical mortgage.
Yeah, puts it out of the range of buyers for sure, or they have to buy something much cheaper. And maybe the housing prices will adjust on the downside. But, of course, I would imagine the Fed and the government will be fighting against that too. It doesn't seem to want to let the free markets work very much at the time. I'm looking at the 10-year right now. It's 3.42%. So it's a ways to go. I guess the housing market is the mortgage market's priced off the 10-year, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, but it's above the 10-year. So a 4% 10-year rate would imply a 6-ish percent.
Is that right? Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that'd be a killer, I would think, in the housing market. But anyway, it's very unnerving times, no doubt about that, to say the least. Today, I wanted to sort of talk to you, have you talk to us about this whole notion of supply chain disruptions and its impact on inflation, and certainly like to get to that, and also, time permitting, have you address some of Alistair MacLeod's ideas, an Asian Bretton Woods. He's talking about a reset, a monetary reset, potentially as the dollar would seem to be more vulnerable than any time I can remember in my lifetime anyway. So Maybe you start out with the whole globalization, expansion of globalization. I mean, everybody was going to China a few years ago. My brother would go there once or twice a year on business. I even went a couple of times. You know, everybody was wanting to go to China, and now there's none of that going on. It seems to me that with the decline of the Soviet Union, that really opened things up. Would you agree with that? Is that when the real globalization move started?
Yeah, I mean, it had been gaining steam before that. But yeah, basically what happened was the U.S., normally the way it works is that the strongest country is the one that's most in favor of free trade, because they tend to benefit disproportionately. And the U.S. is the globally dominant country, really, ever since World War II. And, oh, Jay, sorry, my phone's ringing. One second, let me stop it.
These things happen.
Okay. So the U.S. basically set up a global system in which it guaranteed safety for ships traveling around the world. In other words, we used our Navy to make free trade possible. And that led to something that the economists call, we decided to have things be done wherever it was done most efficiently. We could trade safely. And that led to a lot of factories being set up in other countries and mines being set up in different countries. And so the supply chains got very complex and also very efficient. It works really well in good times. But while we were setting up these hyper-complex trading systems and supply chains, we also decided that it was a good idea to use access to these supply chains as a weapon. You know, and the U.S. started threatening to kick people out of the global financial system and the global trading system, and that antagonized a lot of other countries. So what's happening now is that we're finding out that it's not a good idea to be dependent on countries we might not be friendly with for a lot of what we need. And so we're trying to bring back a lot of production when it was previously done overseas. Everybody's trying to bring it back home and do it back here. So we're seeing a breakdown of globalization, and that's an incredibly expensive process. You know, in the near term, as these supply chains break, it costs a fortune and leads to supply bottlenecks and things like that. And in the longer term, we're going to be doing things in places where it's not quite the most efficient place to do it, but it's safer. And that's going to raise prices, too. So we're looking at a embedded inflation going forward as the globalized system kind of breaks down and has to be rejiggered, you know, to bring everything back home. The markets are kind of they're just beginning to come to grips with that. Because all of a sudden, you know, corporate profits cannot be what they were in the past when we had just-in-time inventory, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's just not as an attractive a time to be investing in, especially multinational companies, but basically anybody now. So this, and that's something that people haven't really grasped yet, that the world isn't going to go back to quote-unquote normal in a year or two when we fix these little problems here and there. But a fundamental change is happening, and it's a very unfavorable change for a lot of traditional investment theses. In other words, the 60-40 stock bond portfolio was brilliant. That was a great thing to have ever since World War II, but it may not be that smart going forward, because you're liable to see, like we saw in the first half of 2022, bear markets in stocks and bonds at the same time as, you know, the new system evolves. So, you know, from the point of view of somebody trying to manage their own money, or a professional money manager trying to keep their clients happy, this is an absolutely terrifying time.
Yeah. Well, John, I think the repercussions of the globalization, too, are far reaching in many different ways. One is, for example, China ran these enormous trade surpluses. It gave them foreign currencies that they could use. In other words, they got richer. And we went in debt, and you know, we went in debt both domestically, and then, you know, we sold treasuries to the rest of the world instead of financing our own government. We let foreigners finance our deficit spending as well. And then every time we'd have a credit cycle, the Fed would lower interest rates lower and lower, which now, you know, begs the question, who in the world wants to buy U.S. treasuries? I mean, even if they're rising, of course, if interest rates continue to rise, owning treasuries, you lose money on the principal. It seems to me that we've dug ourselves into quite a hole, the West has, by our actions, by living beyond our means for so many years. And now, where is the capital? I think of this a lot of times, John, in terms of some of these gold mines that I see that are being developed, these multi-million ounce gold deposits that require maybe hundreds of millions of dollars to put them into production. Where's that money going to come from? It used to would, you know, perhaps in the past when we were at peace with China and the rest of the world, more so we would, you know, we could have foreign capital moving in. But who wants to buy treasuries unless they rise a lot more? Isn't that part of what has to happen? We have to see treasury rates rise so that savings meets the investment demands.
Well, we're kind of reaping what we've sown here with these fiat currencies.
Yeah.
Basically, in 1971, we handed all the world's governments an unlimited credit card in the form of a monetary printing press that was basically unlimited. And they've basically done what you'd expect human beings to do when handed that kind of power. You know, we've got a system now that's incredibly indebted everywhere you look, and tending towards inflationary booms and then gigantic busts, and it can't go on. And the markets are starting to realize that this might be the end of the process, because now we've generated such high inflation. In other words, the value of these currencies are crashing, that central banks no longer have easy money as a tool with which to fix the busts that their excessive indebtedness causes. So we can't keep going like this. So it has to break down. It has to be changed. And there's an interesting debate going on about this now among countries that are, for instance, the BRICS countries are setting up a parallel monetary system.
Yes.
And they're talking about it being a commodity-based currency system versus a fiat-based currency system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an attractive idea. If you've got, say Russia is one of the linchpins of your currency system, and then you've got all their oil backing your currency, whereas with Europe and Japan and the U.S., you have a lot less in terms of natural resources and industrial commodities, et cetera, to back your currency with. So there's now not just a breakdown in the value of the dollar. I mean, the dollar is down by like 9% this year in official terms, which means your treasury bond yield is a negative 6 or 7%. So you've got that, and you've got some very viable competition emerging out there for the big fiat currencies. So I think there's a decent chance that if the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, if those guys decide to set up a true parallel monetary system and back it with all the gold they've been accumulating and all the natural resources they have at their disposal, it's a viable competitor for the dollar and the euro and the yen, which means the value of the fiat currencies are liable to fall to adjust for the fact that they're not monopolies in the world anymore. You know, they don't own the global financial system, and they're not as in demand as they were. So it's possible that we're already seeing the yen and the euro plunge against the dollar, but it's possible that it's time for the dollar now to roll over and start falling against real stuff.
Yeah. What could cause that, John?
Well, if one scenario is that, let's say we raise interest rates further from here, we engineer a huge bust in the financial system. The Fed then has to step back in and start easing again, but it will be doing so in an inflationary environment. And that could lead people to understand finally that there's no help for the system. The Fed no longer has tools to control inflation, and it's choosing to avoid a depression even at the cost of a depreciating dollar. And if you're a rational person in the financial markets and you see that happening, you're going to dump your dollars in as fast as possible and buy real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the Austrian School of Economics calls that a crack-up boom, in which society basically gives up on its currency and shifts into real things that governments can't create more of. And so you have spiking prices, crashing currency values, and general financial instability. And you know, we could easily be heading towards something just like that in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, indeed. I know that Alistair points out that, in fact, what happens in a longer term, gold moves to the countries that are getting richer, and it moves away from the countries that are losing wealth. And you referred to this notion that there's not, it's more than a notion. There's I know that people that track it, the Chinese government doesn't talk about it very much, how much gold it really has. Nobody really knows. But there are people that track the flows from Switzerland and other parts of the world into China have noted that they've had a tremendous buildup. And, of course, they are the largest gold producer in the world. And Russia, I think, is second or third. Both of those countries are building up massive supplies of gold. And as Alistair points out, Russia's doing very well since it went to war and we issued the we stopped trading with them, and they're doing extremely well. I think they're having record surpluses in their exports, and they have only a 35%. I think the debt to GDP is 35% compared to our 130% in the U.S., something like that. So Russia seems to be faring very well. China, of course, has these massive trade surpluses. They have their problems, no doubt about it. Russia, China definitely has their problems that are related to a command economy instead of a free market economy. But I'd like to just touch on a couple of the ideas that Alistair raises in his most recent piece, An Asian Bretton Woods. He has a question mark behind it. Could it be possible? He points out, he says, the financial war between Russia and China, the financial war between Russia with China's tacit backing on one side and America and her NATO allies on the other, has escalated rapidly. It appears that President Putin was thinking several steps ahead when he launched Russia's attack on the Ukraine. Do you see it that way? He's sort of a sly guy, I would say, potentially.
Well, you know, I don't know. That's a big risk to take as part of a plan.
Yeah.
I see Russia as finally reacting to provocation from NATO, which was just, consuming all the land up to Russia's borders. Uh-huh. Russia was going to be surrounded, and it's been saying, look, this is an act of war if you put a military alliance right next to us. And so that could be the whole explanation.
No reason.
But
sure.
Russia is benefiting from this because this messed up the supply chains of the world, caused shortages and higher prices for a lot of the things that Russia sells. And so they're actually making money on this deal so far. Mm-hmm. It may not end well for them, but right now the ruble is a stable currency, unlike a lot of the big fiat currencies. And Russia's foreign exchange reserves are actually growing right now. And mm-hmm. They have been using that money to accumulate gold, just like mm-hmm. China. Russia, China, and India have been accumulating an awful lot of gold and silver in the last couple of decades. And we've been speculating about what their point was, why they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And this could be one of the points, that mm-hmm. they're getting ready to set up a currency that competes with the dollar for reserve currency status, and they're going to back it with all that gold, along with all their other natural resources, and it's going to be legit. So that's when Alistair's talking about a BRICS Bretton Woods.
Yeah,
that is what he's talking about, is the formation of another monetary system,
right?
That might just be legitimate competition for the dollar and the euro and the yen, and might be more than that. It might be potentially a dominant monetary system going forward, just because it's backed by so much more than what our currencies are backed by.
Yeah, he points out, Alistair does, that I think it's something like 39% of the world's population are in those BRICS countries, compared to 19% that live in the NATO, U.S. and NATO-related countries. And anyway, I think what he was suggesting here was that Putin sort of sucked the West in with sanctions, and then that gave him an excuse to cut off and monetize, that is, use oil and gas and gold to back the ruble. In essence, the ruble now being, I think, the world's strongest currency since he did that, since he required Europe to pay for natural gas or oil in rubles. So Alistair went on to say, he said, sanctions, we have seen sanctions fail. We have seen Russia achieve record export surpluses. We have seen the ruble become the strongest currency on the foreign exchanges. And you just basically said that as well. And then he went on to say, we are seeing the West enter a new round of European monetary inflation to pay everyone's energy bills. The euro, yen, and sterling are already collapsing, as you pointed out, John. The dollar will be next. And again, I'm not sure how he can say that for sure, but the dollar will be next, I guess, would be the last one standing in the West. And from Putin's point of view, so far, so good, Alistair suggests. Would you? It's hard to argue with that, I would say, from this point, at this point in time anyway, although we're getting reports that the Ukraine, its army has pushed back and pushed Russia out of certain areas. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that so far so good, although you're right, lately, the last few days have not brought a lot of good news for Russia on the war front. But, you know, we'll see. These things are just inherently unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to know the details of any of this. But I think the broader picture is that the fiat currency countries are destroying their currencies by taking on too much debt, et cetera, et cetera. You know, your listeners know this story front and back. And it's those chickens are finally coming home to roost. You know, the things that we've been doing have been causing ever increasing problems. And now this looks like a possibly insurmountable one that we have now. And so, you know, you could take Russia and Ukraine completely out of this equation, and we would still be looking at a gigantic financial crisis.
Yeah, for sure.
Brought about by our own mismanagement. And I think that's really the key. I mean, you want to own gold and silver, and you want to own good quality mining stocks in what's coming, regardless of whether they settle Ukraine tomorrow or whether it drags on for a long time. We've just screwed up the financial world, and we need to go back to sound money. And you know, as an individual, your investment strategy should be moving your finances in that direction.
Yeah. Well, Alistair wraps it up, at least the introduction to his piece. He says, there is one piece in Putin's jigsaw yet to be put in place, a new currency system to protect Russia and her allies from an approaching Western monetary crisis. Putin is now assembling a new gold-backed multi-currency system by combining plans for a new Asian trade currency with his new Moscow World Standard. With just less than a minute left, you know anything about the Moscow World Standard? Have you read anything about Putin's Moscow World Standard for gold?
No, I haven't, but it makes absolute sense for the BRICS countries if they do decide to create a shared currency to back it with gold. And they've been accumulating it, so they may have enough to do that.
Yeah.
So that could easily be one of the things that happens in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I guess the idea here is that unlike the LBMA and others, that this would be basically a physical standard and not a paper standard. Anyway, we'll have to leave it go at that, John. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Very valuable. And we'll look to talk to you again sometime soon. That is all the time we have for this week. Next week, my guest will be, as I noted, Alistair MacLeod. He'll no doubt talk about this topic or several others that he's written about recently. Also, Michael Wood, the CEO of Arena Gold, will join me. And I'm also expecting to have back Patrick Highsmith with some we're expecting some really good news, some good assays from his company, Timberland Resources, as well. Until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.